Cypris came to my aid. Kanneth, you have stood for us in the past, when our kind struggled to find purchase with the clans. Do you recall? Her words were warm and sweet like honey. Yes, now you have what you ultimately wanted, and I am after what my clan needs for the same leverage. This I can understand. She glanced to me, and I was again struck by how much she looked like Nadia. Then she returned her eyes to Kanneth. We had planned a small game tonight, after our dinner. It should be of interest to you. Oh, Kanneth said, with a slight raise of his eyebrow. Yillamar and the Pretender have agreed to an unarmed match. Kanneth leaned back and laughed. It was a deep chuckle that came from his muscular belly and fell out of his mouth like a downpour. His two guards smirked, and I felt the tension in the room relax. That hardly sounds like an interesting match. I turned to the elvens and noticed that Yillamar smiled at me. What I wanted to say was that it sounded like a waste of time, and they could all go fuck themselves, but the warning Talaxthi gave me still rang in my head. With a word from the Empress, Islata would rush out of this tent and make her way to Nadia. My friend would be murdered by my elven lover. The irony didn't escape me. It will be interesting, the big elven said with a chuckle. I have to object. I need the Pretender alive. Kanneth looked at me and shook his head with a smile. Although the thought of watching someone smash in his face for an hour or two does sound entertaining. Not a fight to the death, of course. The Empress waved her hands and laughed lightly. Just a light match, until one warrior submits to the other. No, the risk is too great. I've seen the hatchet in combat. He looked over to Yillamar and nodded with respect. You will not kill our guest, Yillamar, Talaxthi ordered. No, my Empress. He closed his eyes and bowed his head toward her. There. Talaxthi turned back in our direction and clapped her hands. It is settled, then. We have Mastkur that we can prepare for you while you watch the match. You have Mastkur? The woman said in amazement. Yes, Gaiska. Our guest was given some earlier, but we still have plenty to share, Alatoric answered again for Talaxthi. The Obarni woman nodded and licked her lips before turning to Kanneth. Their hearts began to beat slightly faster, and I saw that the calmness behind Kanneth's eyes was replaced by an emotion I didn't recognize. Desire, perhaps? Very well. We will stay for a feast, watch the Pretender get pummeled by the hatchet, and then carry his broken body to our camp afterward. It will probably make the journey much easier. Kanneth chuckled again and nodded to Talaxthi. Excellent. Notify my chefs that we have three more guests. She commanded her servants, and a few of them dashed out through the rear of the pavilion to fill the Empress's wishes. I would like to prepare for the combat, Yillamar said. Very well. Return in a quarter of an hour, and we shall begin. I will have an arena made at the clearing on the north side of my tent. Yillamar stood, nodded to Kanneth, and gave me a glare of contempt before departing. Once the large elven had left, I turned my attention to my plate and continued to eat the rest of my cold artichoke. It still tasted delicious, and the rose-colored wine that my personal servant poured complemented the flavor perfectly. Kyair. Disanti said my name, and I looked up from the last scraps of my meal to look at the strange elven general. I had originally thought that her hair and eyes were the same shade of green, but her eyes were a few shades lighter. "Do not say that name," Gaiska said. "That is his name, unfortunately," Disanti answered, without looking away from me. Do you wish to prepare for the game against Yulamar? I noticed again how the other elvens seemed to pay almost as much attention when Dissanti spoke as when Talaxthi did. I'm not worried. That seems foolish, Fehalda said in a tone that made it clear she believed I was a complete idiot and not merely foolish. I would like more food. I changed the subject and pointed at my empty plate. Whatever you eat now will just end up decorating the ground outside after Yulamar squeezes it out of your stomach, Fehalda sighed. Ah, I hadn't thought of that. I smiled at her and leaned back into my pillow. I just assumed I'd beat him easily. The elvens and O'Barney in the room laughed at my comment. It was apparent that they thought Yulamar was quite adept at combat. Maybe I should be more worried. But then again, they believed I was some skinny idiot who was named after Kyair. They didn't realize that beating the shit out of elvens was one of my sharpest skills. Alatoricht and Islata did not laugh. The general and his fierce commander seemed a little upset with the direction the events had taken. They noticed me direct my eyes to them, and the silver-haired man turned his attention to Talaxthi. He should prepare for the game. As we have observed, this man is unfamiliar with some of our customs. Islata will mentor him. We shall adjourn to the North Clearing in a few moments. The Empress had been glancing between Kanath, his lapdogs, and Dissanti. She paused for a moment, as if she was waiting for the jade-haired general to say something. When a few empty seconds passed without an answer, she leaned a bit forward, directing her voice to Alatoricht's commander. "Take him outside and prepare him." Islata nodded and stood with the grace of a dancer. Her boots echoed sharply across the wood of the tent floor, and before I could stand, her hand had wrapped around my bicep. Her sharpened nails pierced my skin, and she yanked me to my feet. "Move," she commanded. I was surprised at the anger in her voice and debated resisting, but then I thought better of it. My plans had been ruined by circumstances that I could have foreseen. I should have realized that Jesme might be discovered and Nadia could have decided to return to Naya. Taking out my frustration on Islata wouldn't do me any good. What I really needed was more time to wiggle out of this camp, grab a horse, a weapon, and return to Nadia. But that would doom Jesme and Beltor. There needed to be three of them. One to stay here and spar with the Empress over the location of the Radical, one to warn the Duchess about coming back to Naya, and one to save Jesme and her uncle from wherever Kanath had her. "Your poor decisions have finally caught up to you, O'Barney." I'd seen Islata mad before, but her words came out as molten fire, and her eyes glowed with golden anger. "You should have complied with the Empress's requests earlier." We had walked out of Talaxthi's tent and turned northward. It was night now, but the clouds had left, and the stars shone down in countless showers of diamonds. I saw 24 elvens lighting torches and setting up a complicated wooden deck and table 150 yards to the north of the Empress's large pavilion. You could be correct, or I could have told the Empress what she wanted, and I would be dead right now. I shrugged. I don't trust any of you. The same group of female guards that had accompanied me from my tent to the pavilion flanked Islata. They stood a few feet behind her with scowls on their angular faces. Islata turned to face them and barked an order. "Leave us." "We have been ordered to follow," one of them began to say, before Islata interrupted. "I will fucking gut all four of you." Her hand left my arm and grabbed the hilt of her sword. "I am not in the mood to debate the instructions Vir Nine gave you." The guards' women looked to each other and walked away quickly to stand at the far edges of the clearing around the campsite. "Your ridiculous hatred for our kind has just caused your death." She pulled me closer to her body and led me away from the guards toward what I assumed would be the spot where Yilomar and I would fight. "What do you mean? She would rather kill you than give you to Kaneth. Don't you grasp the situation you have put us in?" She yanked me to a stop, about 70 yards from the build side of the deck. Her words dropped to a whisper. "We'll eventually find the Radical, but we cannot let Kaneth take you back to the clans. You'll speak of what we are doing here, and they will send more of your people. Why did you delay so long? You should have agreed to tell her what she wanted." Her voice had changed. I looked into her eyes, and the usual look of anger was replaced by sadness. "You seem pretty confident that Yilomar can kill me. Isn't this supposed to be an unarmed match? My kind heal fast." "Listen to me, O Barney." Her claws settled at the back of my neck, as if she was about to pull me in for a violent kiss. "Besides herself, the Empress has 3 amazing warriors. Her sister Fehalda, Yilomar, and me." I nodded, and her nails dug deeper into my skin, drawing pinpricks of blood. "He has killed your kind before in unarmed combat. He has in every one of your precious O'Barney games. It is a point the Empress seems to flaunt." I reached back with my left hand and peeled her grip from the nape of my neck. With my right arm, I circled her waist and pulled the elven woman's body against mine. She didn't make any attempt to resist me, but her head tilted sideways, and she looked puzzled by the sudden intimacy. "Would you kill Nadia?" I asked. Her eyes narrowed, and she licked her lips before answering, "Yes." "Why?" "I would be commanded to do so," she said flatly. "You've broken orders before." I pulled her tighter against me and felt her perfect breasts against my chest. Her free arm circled my shoulders. It was a familiar position we had been in, and I hoped it would give me some sort of leverage. "Not her orders. Alatoricht expects me to challenge him. There is no reason for her to kill Nadia. The Duchess can aid her in the political scene in Naya and show her the location of the Radical where she found me. If the Empress wishes your pet dead, then she will be dead, whether by my hand or someone else's." She clenched her jaw and rubbed her fingertips across my back. "There are more important matters to speak of. Submit to Yilomar quickly. Do not approach this fight with your usual bravado or even attempt to match his strikes. He will kill you." "If he kills me, then Nadia will be safe," I said with sarcasm. "The Empress is using her as leverage. I'm sure you realize that." She slipped her right hand free of my grip and pushed against my chest, her face twisted in sudden anger. "This is why I want to kill that bitch. All you care about is her." "I didn't think you were so prone to jealousy," I lied. "Most fight their feelings. I embrace them. Emotions can be useful." She looked at me, and her angular expression softened slightly. "Just submit in this fight. The Empress will figure out a way to make sure that Kaneth doesn't return with you." "If I was a corpse, he wouldn't return with me," I growled. "She is making a quick decision. Alatoricht will speak with her tonight, and we'll come up with a better plan." I didn't think he was that interested in my livelihood either. "He is. I'll beseech him." She licked her lips and shook her head. I wanted to ask her why she was putting in effort on my behalf, but I feared her answer. I didn't need another complication, especially an elven woman with an appetite for blood. The servants had finished setting up a wooden sitting area, complete with tables, and were now working on a circular perimeter to what I assumed would be the arena where I would fight. "What do I need to know about this fight?" I asked her with a nod toward the staging area. "Just submit. Fall down as soon as he punches you and make an obvious admission of defeat." Her voice was calm, but her eyes pleaded. "This is an unarmed contest. No weapons." She nodded. "Any other ridiculous rules I should know about? Pretend I've never seen a game or been in one." "It is frowned upon to bite the opponent, but not forbidden," she said. "You should also decide what boon you want." "Boon?" I asked. "A gift the creator of the game can bestow to the winner." What kind of gift? A far-fetched plan suddenly sprang into my mind. "Anything within reason." She shook her head and looked disappointed. "You will not win, but perhaps you could make a gesture of goodwill with your request." "What will Yillamar ask for?" "He will probably ask for a troop allotment, but I can only guess. The expectation is that he will win, so he won't ask for anything too outrageous, or my Empress will become angry with him." She wiggled away from me, and I let my arms fall from her. "If I am expected to lose, could I ask for an outrageous boon?" I smirked, but my brain was frantically clutching at a plan. "O'Barney, you are expected to die, not merely lose. The Empress gambled that Caneth's desire for Mastkerr would cloud his judgment and allow you to fight Yillamar. He knows the hatchet's battle prowess." She led me a few more steps toward the makeshift arena. "Speak no more of this. We can be heard now." I nodded and followed her directions to stand on the east side of the construction. The banquet platform had been set up on the south side and was raised enough so that those sitting would be able to see the two contestants within the circle. My mind drifted back to the battle circles where the elvens forced us to train. I thought about the escape and revolt Thayer and I had planned. There had been an observation platform for the elvens to watch us then as well. The elvens worked with practiced efficiency, and the waist-high fence was completed in 5 more minutes. Across the wide grass clearing, I saw the Empress depart from her grand pavilion and stroll toward the arena. Her generals, guards, and Caneth's lackeys walked beside her, and they all seemed engaged in a discussion about his sister's activities. To the west of me, Yillamar walked through the thick array of tents with an entourage of a dozen of his red-clad warriors. From the ornate nature of their armor, I guessed they must have been his top commanders. "Remember what we spoke of. Do not do anything foolish and get killed," Islata reminded me again. "I appreciate your concern." I looked over to her and winked. This rewarded me with an intense glare from the warrior woman. "Please be seated, honored guests." Talaxthi motioned to the wooden bench and table. Caneth grunted and moved his muscular frame onto the seat before his two guards joined him. A platter of cheese, bread, and fruit was quickly laid out before them, along with a decanter of wine and water. Talaxthi moved to a spot next to Caneth. They were within arm's length of each other, but Viernine and another guard stood a few feet behind the gap. The other generals and guards filled out the empty tables, with the generals sitting at the edge of the arena. I noticed that Alatoricht had secured a spot to the right of his empress and leaned over to whisper something in her ear. I tried to listen, but was interrupted by Yillamar's group of soldiers giving a rowdy cheer as their leader easily leapt over the fence and into the center of the arena. Yillamar was dressed similar to me, with a light pair of pants and tunic tied with a thin leather cord. But while my clothes were green, his were the same shade of red as the flags that decorated the tents of his army. The giant elven pulled off the shirt and began to move his body in some basic preparation exercises. Elvins could be muscular, but they were normally lithe and lean. Yulimar could have doubled for a human with his bulky muscles and stout frame. He was nearly as big as Caneth was across, and only a bit shorter. "Are the challengers ready?" Talaxthi's voice cut through the prattle of excited conversation like a feasting bell in a hall of hungry soldiers. "Yes, my empress. I will battle for your glory," Yulimar said, with a slight nod of his head. Attention turned to me, and I glanced at Islata. She glared and nodded. "Sure." I stepped over the wooden fence and set a sandaled foot into the grass circle. "Take off your tunic, or he'll grab a hold of it," Islata hissed from the sidelines. I pulled the green cloth off of my chest and threw it in her direction. Then I took a few steps into the torch-lit arena and felt my blood quicken with earth. Caneth's two retainers immediately leaned into him, questioning why I had so many scars. "We can ask him on our journey back," he whispered. They weren't the only ones studying me. I had gained a few pounds of muscle during my brief stay as the Empress's prisoner, but I was still painfully thin and covered in uncountable scars. Virnine, Islata, and Alatoricht had seen them before and questioned me, but I had been elusive in my answers. "Warriors," the Empress began to address us. "As the host of this game, I thank you for providing your strength, endurance, and prowess for our entertainment." The words sounded rehearsed, and I wondered if this was how they normally began their ceremonies. "A small boon will be given to the winner." She looked to the large elven, Yulimar, General of the Red Army. "What boon will you choose?" "If I am victorious, I would ask that the Empress bless me with authority to take over command of Naya's capital." "Your boon will be granted, should you be victorious," the Empress said easily. Alatoricht's pale skin turned a few shades whiter, and his jaw clenched for 2 seconds. "Pretender, you carry the name of our destroyer and the betrayer of your own people. What boon will you choose?" The eyes of the gathered faced me. Most of their faces were painted with a look of amusement. Looks like the odds were against me. I liked that. 5 minutes alone with you in your tent, so that we may speak privately." Startled silence was the response from the Empress and her generals. For a few seconds, they stared at me with complete confusion. "Absolutely not," Fehalda spat down at me, and the other generals nodded in agreement. "Your boon will be granted, should you be victorious," the Empress said with a careful smile. Fehalda looked like she was about to rip her white hair out in frustration, but maybe she thought better of arguing with her sister in front of Caneth and his guards. Servants arrived at the end of the Empress's sentence and laid out plates of the narcotic meat in front of the three Obarni. I noticed their eyes began to glaze, and I shook my head to force the addicting scent from taking hold of my nose and fucking with my brain. I had to focus on beating Yulimar, or else Nadia and I would be killed. Servants then set out other meats, more cheeses, wine, and fruit for the rest of the gathered elven generals. I turned to face Yulimar, and he snorted a laugh at me. "I'm going to enjoy this," he said, as he held his fists up to his chin. "Not as much as me," I smiled, and got into my own stance. My warriors did not spend a large ratio of time training in unarmed combat. In a battle situation, we almost always had a weapon close at hand, either our own or from a fallen opponent or comrade. But nevertheless, if one of our soldiers was ever disarmed, they needed to know effective methods to defend and kill. so while only a fraction of my training was spent learning how to punch, kick, and grapple, I had spent countless hours, over more than 30 years, practicing various ways of killing elvens with or without a weapon. Unarmed combat was simpler than combat with weapons. Sure, a punch to the skull might render even the stoutest O'Barney unconscious, but we healed so fast that even a crushing blow to any other part of the body would be healed within seconds. Knowing that, the fighting stance we developed over the years focused on protecting the head area at the expense of being able to launch heavy haymaker-type punches. My arms rose as high as my face, creating a cage that my face could glance out of sideways. My hands came up over my head and were held open, with palms facing the opponent. I could deliver quick, downward palm strikes or grapple easily. My strong left side was closer to my opponent than my weaker right side, and I held my body at a bladed angle, with my left foot planted firmly into the ground and my right trailing at a comfortable angle, pointing off to Yillamar's right. The stance looked similar to one a mantis would adopt, but it was a comparison we had made many years after we had solidified the style. "You look afraid, pretender," Yillamar taunted, probably assuming that the way I held my arms meant I was surrendering. I nodded and smiled. I felt the euphoric effects of the earth and adrenaline screaming through my body. The rush of battle was a love that never seemed to leave me. "Let the game commence." Before the Empress's words had traveled past us, Yillamar dove toward me. He had wound back his left arm and intended to drive it into my uncovered abdomen. He was fast, really fast, and I was almost unprepared for an elven of his size to move with such quickness. I brought my hands down and met his dash with a knee to his downturned face. His nose shattered into a dozen pieces, and his swinging fist skipped harmlessly across my right hip. The force of his momentum should have sent me tumbling back and put us both on the ground in a grappling position, but I had pulled the earth to me and stayed rooted like a wall of stone with which the massive elven had just collided. My knee hit him again, and I felt the weakness of his skull. One more knee, and the fight would end, with the large elven's body twitching on the ground as his brain struggled to send its last damaged signals to his muscles. But then I might not get everything I wanted from this battle. So I pushed him away. He was already pulling in that direction, so the movement sent him tumbling back comically. He rolled on the grass and then splayed out in a sitting position, completely dazed. I guessed that either he had never fought someone as skilled as me, or had risked an offensive attack right at the start in an effort to end the fight quickly. Under normal circumstances, I would have tried to finish him while I had his head in my hands, or I would have pounced on him while he sat dazed on the grass a few steps away from me. But I did not want the gathered observers to explain Yillamar's defeat as poor luck. I wanted it to be clear to Talaxi, her generals, and Caneth that I wasn't merely a pretender. Perhaps it was a foolish notion, or simple pride, and I should continue the farce that I was confused about my identity, but that wasn't getting me anywhere productive with these elvens. I needed them to fear me now, so I could protect the people I loved. I couldn't do that sitting as a prisoner in the Empress's camp. After a few dozen seconds, Yillamar came around and sprung to his feet. His face was awash in embarrassment, and he raised his hands back up to a fighting position. He moved toward me with more caution now and circled to my left side, forcing me to pivot to meet him. "I got lucky," I said with a smile. He grunted and pressed forward with a left jab that would have connected with my nose if I hadn't slapped it away. As soon as my hand moved out, he attacked with his right fist, aiming for the small space I had left open with my earlier defense. This was a move I expected, though, and I pivoted my other arm to strike it off target. He circled a bit more and sniffed to clear the blood out of his nose. Then he launched another group of punches, leading with his left and then ending with a savage hook from his right arm. I stepped away a few feet, parrying each of the blows as they were inches from my face, but ducking under the final attack that might have ripped my skull from my neck. When I came back up from my dodge, his right side was exposed, and I planted my left fist where the elven kidney dwelled. As soon as I hit, I pushed my right hand against the top of his head and pulled him across my body. The movement threw him to the ground, but he kicked out and managed to entangle my left ankle with his thick leg. He pulled with his feet and grabbed onto my calf with his arm. The movement could have thrown me off balance and taken me to the grass with him, but I slammed down on his chest with my knees and forced him to block a flurry of punches. None of my strikes were particularly fast or powerful. They were just meant to distract and show that I could have hammered him hard if I wished. I took a few steps away from him and let the large elven climb back to his feet. I got lucky again. I smiled and shrugged, raising my arms into my familiar position. Yulimar's face was an impassive mask now, and he threw out a roundhouse kick aimed for my left kneecap. I raised my leg slightly and turned my knee into his kicking leg. The impact jarred both of our bodies, but only he let out a gasp of pain. The damage must have been short-lived, because almost immediately after the collision, he launched another series of punches. This time he varied these strikes between my head and my upper body. I blocked the first three aimed for my face, and then only managed to deflect one of the attacks to my midsection with an elbow. The other two punches connected with my stomach and sounded like an axe handle slamming into a tree twice. Yulimar was strong, but I had trained with the likes of Thayer and had been used to taking hits to the stomach that would break the spines of most warriors. My brain did little more than acknowledge the brief pain and then work on healing the damaged muscle. He teased a kick and then feinted a quick punch with his right hand. I didn't block either ruse, and his left jab got slapped away easily. His technique was almost perfect, but by staring at the top of his chest, I could see a tiny turn of his shoulder that preempted each attack he threw with power. That slight motion only gave me a fraction of a second of notice, but that was all I needed. Unlike Yulimar, my technique was perfect. My strikes also came from above his eye level, which was difficult for most fighters to defend against because they were used to the enemy's weapons being easier to see. My left palm crashed down on his nose and sprayed more blood across his face. He reeled and managed to get his hands up in time to parry my next strike with my right hand. But by that time, my left hand had punched his stomach and smacked against the hardened wood of his muscles. He pushed his arms down to block my next strike there, but I'd already moved back to his face, slamming my palms into his eyes and nose three more times before he fell away again, reeling from the assault and blood covering his eyes. I stepped closer to him and delivered a roundhouse kick to his right leg while he retreated. The sound of his knee breaking and tearing reminded me of a celery stalk being crunched. He went down on his back, but didn't scream. His face, however, did show that he was in serious pain, and he moved his working leg around to position it between us so I couldn't approach him as easily. Of course, I could have just jumped up a few dozen feet and then landed on him, shattering his chest or skull, but that would have meant ending the fight too soon. I stepped back carefully, keeping my eyes on Yulimar's healing body, until I reached the edge of the wooden fence where Islata stood. I glanced at her over my shoulder and saw her eyes wide with surprise. Then I risked a quick glance at the elvens and O'Barney on the raised wooden platforms and noticed similar looks of disbelief. Kanath's eyes were a piercing blue, and he was so engrossed in watching us that he had forgotten about eating his mast cur. Yulamar got to his feet and beckoned for me to approach him. He was favoring the knee I had just broken, but it looked like it had enough strength to stand. I smiled at him and waved him away. "That's okay. Take your time." I leaned up against the fence and crossed my arms. "I'm fine. Let's finish this," he yelled, and took a few steps toward me with his fists raised. "Very well," I growled, and the earth flowed through my body like lava. The elven sprinted the 20 feet between us and launched himself in the air, coming down with his uninjured leg positioned like a dagger thrust at my head. It was a beautiful kick, risky, and one that would have probably caught a few of my lesser warriors unprepared. But it was too predictable for me, and I decided that the best course of action would be to not stand in the spot Yulamar had aimed his jump. I spun away and then ducked a back fist he intended for my skull. He responded with a roundhouse kick, using the momentum from his initial attack to continue the spin of his body. I hammered my fist into his groin and then grabbed his left leg in the crook of my right arm. Then I shot to my feet, carrying his leg up with me and pushing our weight down to where his left leg should have supported his body. This left his broken leg to hold all of our mass. As he tumbled to the ground, he threw a last punch with his right hand. It didn't have much strength in it, though, and I easily parried it with my left hand. He was strong for an elven, and he shook his massive leg like one of the worms I'd encountered in the caverns below Naya. I managed to hold on, though, and stomped his groin twice again, and then kicked him in the face, stunning the big man for a brief second. I used the opportunity to step across his body and bring his leg across the inside of mine, breaking his other knee with a quick snap of my arms. He didn't scream or grunt from the pain, and I felt a twinge of respect for the elven's self-control. But soon, he wouldn't be making any noises. He grabbed onto my left leg with both of his hands and pulled with amazing strength. But I was rooted in the earth again, and could have been unmovable if I had wished. Instead, I allowed him to pull me down and rewarded his face with a sharp elbow from my right arm. The blow cut open the side of his cheek and broke his jaw. For a few seconds, we were a mess of arms, legs, and slick blood. The elven tried to grab a hold of my neck and draw me into his chest, probably so he could buy himself time to heal. While he wiggled his arms against me, I landed strikes against his throat and face while I moved my hips over his chest for better leverage. Yulamar was in a horrible position beneath me. Blood coated his eyes, preventing him from seeing exactly where I was or where my next blow would connect. I could have finished him in one or two more punches, but I decided to prolong his suffering. I slammed his face and throat a few dozen more times with enough strength to crush and break bones, but not enough to end his life. Finally, his defending arms grew slack, and he fell unconscious from the beating. One more blow, and he could be dead. Another fucking elven wiped from this world. I raised my fist and looked down at the broken man. I had expected somewhat of a challenge, but I should have guessed that the fighting styles and techniques might have grown weaker since my time. It was not as if these O'Barney games were life or death competition. They seemed more of a political tool to keep the clans occupied in a fake power struggle. I had battled every single day, not for sport or entertainment, but for my life and the lives of thousands of my brothers and sisters. These elvens lacked the commitment and discipline we were forced to develop. Even in the war of my past, it was not until the elvens realized that they were close to extinction that they began to unite their forces and take their training seriously. Yulamar had intended to kill me. And if it was him, sitting on top of my unconscious body, he would have driven his ham-sized fist through my skull and ended me. I should have done the same. I should have ended him. I should have covered the grass with his brains and left no doubt in the Empress's mind that I could destroy her people now, as I had so long ago. But my hand came down and wrapped around the back of his large neck instead. I stood up and yanked his body over as a mother wolf might pick up a puppy by its scruff. I walked over to the side of the arena where the Elvins and O'Barney sat. Their food lay untouched, and there wasn't a face in the audience that didn't wear an expression of amazement, including Caneth, who looked completely dumbfounded, as if I had pulled the sun down from the sky and then taken a large bite out of the fire. "Looks like I win." I tossed Yulimar unceremoniously against the stage. His head thunked against the wood, and he draped over the side of the ledge like a red rag doll. "Well done," Caneth smiled and clapped his hands together. "Shut the fuck up," I silenced him and got another look of fear from everyone else. He was unskilled and ill-suited to fight me. It took me more effort not to kill him. "You cannot speak to Caneth that way, pretender," the O'Barney woman said with unbridled malice. Her hand drifted down to where a sword should have hung, but the three were unarmed. "I just did. Would you like to step in here and silence me?" I flicked my fingers at her and sprayed Yulimar's blood on the table where she sat. A few drops landed on her plate of food. She fumbled a reply, but the answer was obvious to those observing. Even the expression on Caneth's face was telling. The large man did not want to battle me. "You..." I pointed a bloody finger at Talaxthi, who had recovered from her bout of shock and wore a calm expression again. "And I have an appointment in your tent. Alone. Let's go." I turned and walked south toward her pavilion. Yulimar's group of commanders stood at the edge of the arena, and they all had hands on their weapon handles. Their eyes were dancing between the Empress and my bloody body. Talaxthi must have given them a signal behind my back, because the red-clad warriors parted to let me pass over the fence. I heard the soft rustle of silk and small bells ring behind me as Talaxthi rose from her seat. "You cannot be alone with that monster," I recognized Jayita's voice whisper. "The boon will be granted." "I will attend you," Fehalda said. I was about 50 feet outside of the arena now, about a quarter of the way to the Empress's pavilion. "No, remain here. Caneth, please enjoy your massacre. We will talk more when I return." "Aye," he grunted. Half a minute later, I strolled into the Empress's tent. There were no guards or servants inside, and a few of the lamps had gone out, casting the beautiful pavilion in an eerie orange glow. Off to the side of the pillows sat an uncorked bottle of red wine in a silver-etched bucket of chilled water. I grabbed it and took a long swig, washing the taste of blood and combat out of my mouth, and then carried it with me to the pillows. Talaxthi's cushions smelled like her, lavender and pine needles. I sat down at her place so I could get a clear view of the rest of the room. My back was to the curtain that separated the rear half of the large tent, but I did not hear the heartbeats of anyone. The Empress's short sword lay discarded to the left of her pillow. I picked up the slightly curved weapon and pulled it halfway out of its green and white lacquered wooden sheath. The metal of the blade was the same odd gray of Islata's sword. It looked similar to the weapons and armor that most of my troops eventually had taken possession of, but my uneducated eye could not tell if it was exactly the same. I heard Talaxthi descend the wooden stairs into her pavilion, but I continued to study the elaborate flowers that were etched across the business side of the blade. I didn't know much about weapon crafting, but I imagined that this had taken a long time for a smith to make. "You are in my seat," the Empress said flatly. "So I am." I looked up and saw the smile she normally wore was missing. I pointed at the pad where I previously sat. Sit down. Kyair, do you wish to speak or to fight? Her arms crossed, and I was struck again by how much she looked like Nadia, or how much Nadia looked like her. I wish to speak with you. Then get your ass out of my seat, she commanded with a growl. Very well. I grinned and moved over to the next pad, turning it around so that it faced her seat. And my sword? She asked. It is beautiful. Too light for my tastes, but it looks effective. I slid the blade back into the sheath with a sharp snap, and then tossed it to the bronze-haired woman. Her hands were fast, and the motion she used to catch it was a graceful blur of her ornate robe. It is effective. She pushed the sheath into the sash at her waist, walked toward her pillow, and sat. Our faces were a few feet from each other now, and if she had chosen to draw her sword, our meeting would get ugly fast. We stared at each other for a few seconds. Most elvens were beautiful, with chiseled, angular features, smooth skin, almond-shaped eyes of bizarre colors, and wondrous hair that looked to be made of liquid metal. The Empress's eyes were a light amber color, and her hair was a dark shade of metallic bronze that any artist would have loved to touch. Her skin shone a few shades lighter than Nadia's, but the resemblance was uncanny and transcended their races. They were both extremely beautiful women. "Why didn't you kill him?" she asked finally, with a raised eyebrow. Her voice was soft and silky. I couldn't help but smell her intoxicating breath as we sat so close to each other. "Sometimes life is worse than death," I said. Her eyes opened a bit at my explanation, and I wondered if it would be true for Yillamar. Would his loss to me ruin his career, or would he train harder and become stronger because of it? "I could guess you would feel that way." Her voice was emotionless, but you only have a few minutes left alone in my presence, so I would recommend you begin the conversation you intended. "I would like you to tell me a story," I said, with the wine on my breath. "I know plenty of stories, Pretender. This seems a waste of your time. Do you have a particular story you want to hear? A children's tale? Maybe one about your namesake? Perhaps you'd like to hear about Linan, since you were muttering it in your sleep?" She laughed and shook her head slightly. She must have thought I was completely insane. "Tell me the story of how you lost your half-human daughter," I said. The woman stopped mid-laugh. Her hands dropped to the sides of her robe, and I heard the sound of all the air leaving her lungs. But her face was the most telling of all, and the expression was one I had never seen from the ruler of the elven people. In our brief encounters, she had seemed to dance from control to contrived joy so quickly. She was someone who I was sure had mastered her emotions and physical abilities to their absolute peak. It was an expression I had seen once before, in the middle of the campaign to rid our lives of the elvens. I had battled the leader of one of their large battalions, defeated him in combat, yanked apart his chest piece, tore off part of his ribcage, and then ripped out his heart. While the man was still in his death throes, I had pulled off my helm and eaten the red, pulsing muscle. The look on his face as he watched me rip the very life from his body and mercilessly take a bite was the same expression the Empress had on her face now.
Chapter 18. Jesme. That night, my moon flow began. The occurrence was always frustrating, even when I had lived in an opulent castle with four handmaidens and servants to assist with the process. Being the only woman with a group of men in the wilderness made it uncomfortable and embarrassing. I recall the Kyair had a keen sense of smell, so I reasoned that the other Obarni could sense the blood. I had to make frequent trips into the oak trees to clean myself, and they didn't seem to inquire or care about my whereabouts. Maybe I was more concerned about it than I should have been. After all, there was another woman they had been traveling with, and I imagined she also had a moonflow. The men were probably used to such occurrences and left me to my personal time. Maybe I was more embarrassed that I had thought I was pregnant with Kair's child. I had not wanted to believe the herbalist, but here was the bloody proof. She had been right, of course. Stress must have contributed to the tardiness of my flow. There was little to do in the camp. My uncle had continued to talk to the tattooed warriors about their clans, culture, training methods, and any suggestions they had to appeal to Kenneth. I helped Jairon prepare the meals and tried not to draw too much attention to my condition. But nothing we did eased the tension that set in with the three men after 2 days had passed. "They should be back by now," Jason whispered to his clansmen late on the second night. My stomach had been cramping, and it was difficult to slumber on the thin blanket. I guess that they probably thought I slept, and I did my best to steady my breathing so that they would continue to think so.
"Aye,"
Anik said simply. The big man had stopped giving me hungry looks after our discussion about Kenneth.
"I am not comfortable waiting," Jason said. "Aaron, tell me more of this pretender. He couldn't give Kenneth any trouble."
"It was good that he brought Gazka and Naom," Aaron whispered.
"I can't imagine anyone could give Kenneth trouble,"
Anik said. Aaron grunted and said nothing else. There was silence for a few moments.
"What if they are not here tomorrow?"
Jason asked with urgency to his question.
"Then we follow the plan,"
Anik growled. His voice was dark, and it almost caused me to shiver.
"I say we follow the last part only,"
Aaron said.
"No need for the first part." "I outrank you,"
Anik stated. I felt the anger in his voice. It made my ribs rattle from across the fire pit, though the big man only whispered.
"That is true, but I'm sure you know we only needed to hold them so that Kenneth would have leverage over the pretender. If he doesn't return, then what use are they to us?" "Kenneth gave an order." "This world has made you soft."
"I know I've grown soft," Aaron laughed,
"but that doesn't mean I am wrong. The girl and her uncle probably won't live long once the Elvins get a hold of them anyway. No need to get your hands bloody."
My body started to shake and shiver as a chill worked its way from my hair to my toes. They would kill us if Kenneth did not return.
"Listen,"
Jason hissed. The warriors suddenly stopped their conversation. I tried not to gasp, cry out, or make any other noises through my terror. They must have heard my breathing and figured out I was awake. Kair had told me that he could hear a mouse's heartbeat a few hundred yards away, so I imagined that these three men easily heard the panic echoing through my body like broken glass down a stone set of stairs.
"Sounds like four horses,"
Anik whispered.
"I'll go. I am quieter than you both,"
Aaron said. My eyes were closed, my back to the fire and the three men. A slight shift of dirt came to my ears, and I assumed the lanky woodsmen had crept from the campsite. I was thankful that they didn't suspect I was awake, but now I was even more terrified about the possibility of Kenneth returning with Kair. I was growing weary of the constant fear. I thought I had taken control of my emotions and beaten back my dread. I knew what had to be done with Kenneth, but I still feared doing it. More than that, I was afraid of seeing Kair again. I was afraid he would not want me now. Or worse, that he would, and that this would interfere with what I needed to do to save my kingdom.
"It is them."
Aaron's voice was excited and no longer whispering. Beltor rolled over and sat up. I heard an owl hoot from beside me, and a matching one echoed from a distance across the pond. It was loud enough for me to end my sleeping charade, and I sat up and feigned a startled expression accompanied by a gasp. Aaron, Jason, and Anik busied themselves with cleaning up the camp, although I had already done most of the work a few hours ago. The warriors seemed nervous about Kenneth's return. I made sure that my bedroll and blanket were arranged neatly, and then ran my hands through my long hair to remove some of the tangles. Soon I heard the approach of horses from the edge of the pond, and I strained my eyes to see into the darkness. Beltor stood next to me, and I felt his arm circle my shoulders protectively.
I looked up into his face, and he gave me a slight smile and nod. I smiled back and hoped that even if I was unable to convince Kenneth to help me, we would be allowed to live.
Oh,
I recognized Kenneth. The large, muscular man sat on a horse that was equally stout. Behind him rode the man and woman who had accompanied him. Behind them was Kyre. I had expected to feel emotion when I saw him, but the sudden flurry of my heart leaping in my chest was more powerful than ever. His dark hair had grown a bit longer, and he looked like he had gained some much-needed weight. He saw me from across the firelight and gave me a smile that made every part of my skin tingle. I wanted to run through the clearing, jump into the saddle, throw my arms around his neck, and kiss him 1,000 times.
This is the Pretender.
Anik sounded less than impressed.
No,
Kyre said with a laugh. He lifted his leg over the pommel of the saddle and slid off the horse with practiced ease. I saw that his hands were manacled together with about 2 feet of chain.
I'm actually Kyre.
He stuck his tongue out at Anik and walked toward me. Our eyes met, and the light from the fire seemed to burn the green of his eyes and turn them into gold. I wanted to say something, but my tongue caught in my mouth, and my heart beat so fast I thought I would faint.
Hello, Jess.
He raised his arms above my head and then brought them down over me. I felt his lips on my forehead, and then his warm embrace carried me back to the wonderful nights we spent in the wilderness making love endlessly. Hello, I managed to whisper after he released me. Tears came to my eyes, and I had to blink and then look away to the fire.
Duke, it is great to see you.
The chains on Kyre's arms rattled, and I guessed the two men were shaking hands.
Same to you, lad. Do you carry any news of my daughter? Yes, she has gathered an army at Fisherman's Gorge and was intending to leave for Brilla. Unfortunately, the Empress was one step ahead and had already made trade agreements with your southern neighbors. They won't harbor our forces. Last I heard, Nadia was returning to Naya to discuss a peaceful surrender.
Damn it, Beltor said.
Agreed. The Empress had sent a large force to the gorge. Naya's army could have been slaughtered, but they were only looking to capture me, so I went with them peacefully. I was hoping to negotiate with the Empress and then return to Nadia's side to help her manage the army.
I felt composed enough to face Kyre again. He stood with his arms crossed, chains dangling from his wrists. His arms looked a bit more muscular. I didn't see the bones anymore, but I could still trace almost every single vein and artery on each arm. I thought about what he said and tried to quell the selfish surge of jealousy that sprung up when he mentioned what he had wanted to do. His plan had not been to return to me as he had promised, but to go to Nadia. He was only here now as a prisoner of Kenneth. I told myself he had only made those plans as they were the most strategic move for Naya, not because he wanted to be with Nadia instead of me. Though it did not matter. We could not be together now, no matter what either of us wanted.
Then Kenneth shows up and tells me that he has you and Jesme and will kill you if I don't come with him. So, here I am.
He pointed his thumb over his shoulder at Kenneth, who had gotten off of his horse and was unpacking a few saddlebags of grains for the animals. The larger warrior didn't acknowledge Kyre's reference, but the man and woman who traveled with them glared at Kyre's back with malice. I smiled as I heard his explanation and realized he had given up his original plans to save me.
What happens now?
Beltor crossed his arms to match Kyre's.
They are taking me to their leaders. Apparently I've broken some sort of law and need to be executed.
The handsome man laughed, and the faces of Kenneth's clansmen grew darker.
This is no laughing matter, Pretender. You will be judged by the council, tortured, and then killed,
Jason said while he gave sideways glances to Kenneth.
But first I'd like to eat.
Kyre shrugged and then pointed to Ayaren.
Hello, my friend. I smell boar in that pot. Were you stewing some? Yes,
Ayaren stuttered. The tall man glanced at Kenneth, who spared a nod. Then Ayaren went to the pot and began to stir the leftover meat from our dinner.
Kair moved over to the log, kicked a few stones away that were lodged in the dirt behind the wood, and then sat. He stretched his legs and arms out against the chains on his wrist and let out a contented sigh. The rest of us stood uncomfortably for a few seconds, wondering what we should do with ourselves. Then I decided to sit on the log next to him and watch his silhouette against the fire's light. Jason and Annex sat after I did, then my uncle sat on the other side of Kair. Kenneth finished removing the bags of grain from his horse, and he led it to a tree 20 yards from us before he rubbed down the animal.
"Can you take care of my horse when you're finished, Kenneth?"
Kair called out to the tattooed man.